Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I have to tell you that I am so damn excited for this ELO show on Friday night because I've never seen Jeff Lynne. And I've been sneaking a little peek at the set list, and they look really good. He is back on the road as of last week. They took a little break. And I don't remember when he's ever been here. Somebody told me they were here in the early 80s. I certainly didn't see that show, and I'm a huge fan of ELO. But Friday night, former Senator Lamping and I are going to the show and his wife, so I can't wait for that.
I'm really excited for you.
I am too.
Well, and you know, I don't always like to look at set lists because I like surprises, but I did kind of want to know what they were doing, and it looks very, very interesting. So that's Friday. We'll be talking about it a little bit more as we get into the weekend. We'll have a roundtable on Friday afternoon. Jane will be here. State Rep Donna Barringer, who's running for, what is she running for now? They all run for something.
Is she running for something?
She's running for the comptroller.
Yeah.
Right.
Is she?
Yeah.
Did you knock out, what's his name with the initials?
Oh. No, that's Gregory FX.
Oh, yeah.
He's the, he's the collector of
revenue.
Tax revenue.
Yeah.
No, it's, what's her name is the,
what's her name?
Yeah, who knows?
Okay.
Really, do they really even matter?
Darlene Green?
That's it.
Wow, I pulled that out of nowhere.
I think that's true.
I don't know if that's true.
Right.
Is that right, Fred? I might be making that up.
Nobody, it's the person who has the purse strings, essentially, in St. Louis, right? Or do you say controller? Is it controller?
I don't know. I think either is acceptable.
Well, because it's really controller, but it's with an M. Yeah, it's Darlene Green. Look
okay,
at that.
All right.
Look at that. It's the you know, she's, it says here, that's how I know it's true, on the interweb, Comptroller Green is a citywide elected official and directs her staff to assist in the city's daily financial operations and economic development strategies. Oh, wait, we have economic development strategies in the city of St. Louis? Who knew?
Maybe when Donna gets there.
Yeah. You know what? I clicked on some clickbait here from Odyssey St. Louis a short time ago, and I want to share that with the group.
Okay.
Because, honest to God, you know how we send these emails out? Listeners get them. I had one that came in, and it said, these are the top 10 bad diner behaviors at restaurants. And I clicked on the damn thing because I was kind of curious. Have you seen this, Fred?
No, I've always been afraid to click on those things.
It's one of our own emails from Odyssey.
Oh, okay.
Ethan Hannaford is helping produce today. Did you see this email by any chance?
I did not.
Okay, well, I clicked on it, okay? And I'm just curious. And here's what they say. These are the top 10 bad diner behaviors according to a survey. I think it said who did the survey, but I don't really care at this point. I'm just going to tell you what the answers
are. I'm sure it's highbrow.
90% say, this is, oh, I see. Yeah, let me kind of change this. So one of the bad behaviors is that people say they won't pay for a dish that they didn't like but ate. How can you do that?
You
either send it back or you don't send it back.
Correct.
You don't say, I'm not going to pay for this because I ate the whole thing. Allow their children to roam freely. This would be a pretty significant issue.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, take care of your kids, right? Debate menu prices with the staff.
Do people do that?
Yeah, what's the to debate?
I'll give you 15 for it.
Oh, yeah. That's ridiculous.
Are you making them an offer?
Have you actually ever seen anybody do that?
No, these things are goofy. That's why I said it was clickbait. Yeah, exactly. Stay past the restaurant's closing time. Who does that?
I didn't know you could.
I didn't either. Now, I don't think you can. They're going to tell you.
Someone that used to be a server, that is a thing where
people do it?
Oh, yeah. People will come in right before closing time. Right before the kitchen closes, and they'll get something, and they will take their sweet time.
Okay, well, that's rude.
And usually those people don't tip very well.
Of course not.
When you did food service, what did you do?
I was a server.
Okay. Did anyone do this? Hey, Ethan. Snap their fingers?
Because
that's on this list.
It was not very common, but it did happen on the occasion.
Even I haven't done that.
Somebody would snap their fingers?
Hey, you kid over here. I've never even done that. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's see here. Bring outside food or drinks into the restaurant. Did that happen?
Not very often. No, but not that I can think of off the top of my head, really.
I'm going to ask for a bit of an allowance here and a little flexibility because there every once in a while I'm polishing off a beautiful ice-cold can of Diet Coke and I'm bringing it into the restaurant just to finish it off. Or maybe if they have Pepsi. But yeah, that's probably not cool.
People would bring the Mio packets or stuff to put in their drinks, but I don't think very often just bringing a Diet Coke into a restaurant.
Not really. Like, again, like I'm meeting someone for lunch. I have the can of Coke in my hand.
Leave it in the car.
Show up 15 minutes late to a reservation. That's kind of like the cut mark, right? 15 minutes. You don't want to do that. If I'm even running 5 minutes late for a reservation, I call. Well, yeah. I'll call and say, look, I'm on my way or whatever the situation.
That's good. I understand that could create difficulties.
Leave a mess at the table, such as spilled drinks or food crumbs. I don't do this. I actually try to leave my little eating station cleaner than I, you know, came into it, but you can see how people wouldn't take care of their spaces, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Occupy a table for an extended period during busy hours.
Yeah.
And that's, you'd like to move those tables, right?
Yeah. I can see that.
You don't want to, especially if you're coming in there and you're, hey, I got 8 people. We're ordering only appetizers and nobody's drinking alcohol.
The worst.
Yeah, exactly.
This is why I don't understand how coffee houses that have people that just sit on laptops all day
can make any money. I know.
Tipping well can solve all the problems in the world. All these things can piss you off, but if they tip well, it's like, never mind. Thank you.
Finally, the last top 10 bad diner behaviors, according to a survey that I don't even know who did it because I didn't really pay attention to that.
Sure.
Flirt with the staff. Did you have people flirting with you, Ethan?
This sounds interesting.
I have a story. I'm not sure how.
Yes, you are sure. You're going to tell it right now. Let's go.
I had a guy one time that walked up to me, and I thought that he was just being friendly. Mm-hmm. I thought, honestly, that he may have had some special needs issues.
Oh.
So I was being friendly back, and I come to find out he gave his number to one of my coworkers to give to me later.
Well.
So it turns out that what I thought was special needs
someone on the spectrum, they were just hitting on you.
Was not.
Yeah.
Well, a little slow on the uptake.
You know, the thing, like, I think if I were a female and I was a waitress, can you say that? Food server. But you know how people, and waitresses do this to you, like, when I don't like this very much, if someone will call me sweetie or something like that, right? Not that I'm not sweet, Sue, you know.
I was going to say, are annoyed by that?
Yeah, I don't know. If someone just says, hey, sweetie, or, you know, even at the convenience store.
They
don't know me, yes.
Oh, yeah. You want them to say, hey,
I don't want them to say anything.
What if they're like grandma age? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Because there's a level where I can see where it'd be
probably
a little bit weird. But
these are people, sometimes these are people that are younger than me.
Right. That's
a little weird.
Hmm.
No, honey. I'm not going for that.
Yeah.
Babe, right?
I'm with you.
They don't want anything. They're just trying to be nice.
But, you know, the customers do it in reverse is my point.
Well, yeah, they
do.
They'll
call, hey, sugar, come on over here with a little sugar.
Okay, I have not heard anyone say,
I'm making it up.
Hey,
what restaurants are you going to?
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
I just want to go on the record. I've never called someone sugar in my life. It's just, I don't know why that came out. But.
Well, it just flowed right off the tongue.
It did.
On this day in history, 52 years ago, I'm still a little bit in Olympics mode. In 1972, at the Munich Olympics, Mark Spitz, remember with his mustache, Fred? You remember Mark Spitz and his Speedo? Became the first Olympian to ever win 7 gold medals. And Ethan, we were just little kids at the time, but I remember him on like the Wheaties box, and it was a huge deal.
He was a cultural phenomenon.
It was
no doubt.
Unbelievable.
This is the guy that Michael Phelps broke his record, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
His seventh was for the 400-meter medley swimming relay. Sadly for him, of course, Michael Phelps got 8 gold medals at the 2008 Beijing Olympics. Overall, Phelps has 23 gold, 3 silver, 2 bronze. Spitz had 9 gold, 1 silver, 1 bronze.
Mark Spitz, and there's another name that pops from that era of Olympics.
Is it the diver?
No, it's the person that's no longer a male.
Bruce Jenner.
That was also on the Wheaties box.
Right.
Yeah. And 26 years ago today, in 1998, Google was incorporated. It's only 26 years old. And it was incorporated by Larry Page and Sergey Brin while they were PhD students at Stanford. Together, they own about 14% of its shares and control 56% of the stockholder voting power through super voting stock. I have no idea what any of this means. By the way, the original name of Google was Backrub. Which seems appropriate
no
for this
way.
Entire Sue's News statue.
How could I have never heard that before?
I don't know, but that's what it says.
Just looking
so
at back rub right now, honey.
So what did
Sugar,
you search?
Can you give me a back rub?
Google?
I don't know. No, we had, let me think about this just
AOL
a little bit.
Online?
Well, AOL, they did have a search function.
Yahoo was there.
Yahoo. And then there was that, what was that other browser that we used?
Ask.com had one.
Oh, I don't remember. Oh, I can see it.
Ask Jeeves. Remember that one?
Ask Jeeves.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I have a clear memory of somebody looking up a car on Ask Jeeves.
Like the first browser that I ever used. And by the way, back then, I was like, what is a browser? And they were telling me, what was that thing called? There was another browser that had a search function.
I don't know.
I can't think of this. There's a, like, it seems like a navigation term or something like that. What am I coming up
that's
with?
That's interesting.
I'm thinking Explorer.
It wasn't that, though.
No.
But that's a good guess.
It is a good guess. Post Malone and Dwight Yoakam. You know I love me some Dwight Yoakam, and there's nothing wrong with Post
Netscape
Malone.
Netscape Navigator.
Netscape Navigator.
There it is.
Yes.
David Klein, producer emeritus, weighs in on that.
Thank
a little bit
you.
Too late. I'd already Googled it, but nice try, Dave. Thank you for trying.
Well, he tried to back rub. Post Malone and Dwight Yoakam just shot a music video where they were riding horseback down Sunset Boulevard. It is awesome. They're wearing like the sparkly jackets. So those two are getting together to do a song of some sort. And let's see, TMZ caught up with, I love it when TMZ calls Post Malone Posty. TMZ caught up with Posty riding horseback alongside Dwight Yoakam during the filming of their music video in Hollywood, and it seems like another country collaboration is in the works. But in the video, both Posty and Dwight are decked out of their horses singing along and just taking horses down past the Roxy on the Sunset Strip. It's kind of something fun to see. Should that ever take you?
Telling you, I'm digging the Post Malone country stuff. Yeah. I like it a lot.
Post Malone is my favorite artist.
See?
He's number one.
Is it really?
Yes, he's number one.
Have you seen him in concert?
I've seen him in concert. It's as far as like artists today.
Right.
It has to be one of the best because it's very authentic. He's, you know, at first when it was more rap heavy, it didn't have a band with him. It was a lot of tracks, but now there's a band with him. He just continues to develop as an artist. He's very talented.
I was completely, the whole Post Malone thing eluded me for a long time because I think a lot of it was a little bit more hip hoppy and I didn't get it, but he has become more melodic and, you know, poppy, if you will. And the songs have been really good. The collaborations. So.
Ethan, did you see him in St. Louis?
Mm-hmm.
Was that his injury concert? Didn't he get injured at a concert?
So he did get injured at a concert. I saw the one before that, but the one he was injured at, they left the floor area where the dancers and he comes out open. He fell in it and he broke two ribs.
Oh, that's right.
Good
grief.
I believe it was two ribs. He came back out and he still performed, but he said that he felt so bad to St. Louis that the next time he was here, he would do an extra long
That's nice.
But didn't the last show that you did here get like rain delayed or something like that?
Yeah, there was a rain delay the last one. That was at the amphitheater.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, he was being interviewed by Dwight on Dwight's Sirius XM channel, and he said, man, these guys could sing back in the day. He said, Posty said, I'm not really a strong singer.
That's what happens when you smoke two packs a day.
I was going to say, it's interesting to hear him talk about that.
Do you fancy most of your face tattoos after Post Malone 2, Ethan? Or were they inspired by other things?
A portion of them. Some of them have come with the Taylor Swift fascination.
And you got
a
couple of gold teeth as well, I think.
Yeah,
right?
The gold teeth. They're making their way. They're making their way.
There are several companies in Japan that will quit your job for you. This is a new industry.
Can you give me their names quickly?
They call your employer, tell them you're leaving, and even handle the details like your last day and how to return company-owned equipment. For now, two prominent companies offering this service are in Japan. which makes sense because culturally, Japanese people are less confrontational than we are, than a Mark Reardon would be. But the reverse could be, they think that the service will cost you around $200 to $300. So you have to figure out whether or not it's worth it. I think you're doing it on your own.
Yeah, why would you need I can do that on my own. I can't do many things on my own, but I can do that on my own. I quit my job on my own, I think. Although I've really, the last jobs that I've lost, they haven't been on my own. They've been sent packing. So they've done that on their own, too.
There's no service for
that. The only thing I like about this is that it's almost representative on our side. When I say our side, the employee side. Because the employer always gets to cut the cord and, take all your stuff away, and then you never see them again, and you're just ushered out the door. But this is kind of a weird way of the employee saying, hey, I've had enough of you.
Yeah.
I'm going in a different direction.
I'm hiring someone to do it for me.
Yeah, exactly.
And finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact. SpongeBob SquarePants was supposed to be named SpongeBoy, and the show would be called SpongeBoy Ahoy! But it turned out a mop company already owned a trademark on the character called SpongeBoy.
Thank God.
So they changed it to SpongeBob. And that's what happened. And that's it for Sue's News.
Everything happens for
a reason. I had back rubbed that one, and that's how I knew that one before, right. Sue. But that was a really good random fact. 4:25. We're coming back here. Tim Fitch weighing in on the tragic story of the day, the school shooting down in Georgia. Much more to come.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we have details emerging from the school shooting down in Georgia, and maybe this was one of the more stunning revelations this afternoon.
The shooter is in custody. His name is Colt, that's C-O-L-T, Gray. He is a 14-year-old student here at the school, G-R-A-Y. He is a 14-year-old student here at the high school. Again, he has been taken into custody. He will be charged with murder, and he will be tried as an adult. And handled as an adult.
You know, I want to hear more about that, handled as an adult, because that was a little surprising when I heard that. Former St. Louis County Police Chief, former St. Louis Councilman Tim Fitch with us this afternoon. Chief, what really pops there is this kid was 14 years old.
Yeah, it's always stunning when they're that age. But I'll tell you, Mark, this isn't the first time we've seen that. Go back to 98 and look at the Westside Middle School shooting in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Those two shooters, they killed five people, 11 and 13. So this is not unheard of, but it is rare.
Yeah, well, in this particular situation, there's a lot of positives when it comes to law enforcement, it seems, from this perspective. They seemingly were on the scene very, very quickly. Unfortunately, two adults were killed, two teachers, two kids, nine people total. So I guess that would be five injured. And police swarmed very quickly, and they got this kid into custody.
That's right. There were two school resource officers there at the school when this happened. Now you'll have some people say, well, it didn't stop it from happening. It certainly stopped it from being much, much, much worse. I can remember fighting on the county council, Lisa Clancy and Kelly Dunway wanting to get rid of the county school resource officers because they said it was nothing more than making a school to prison pipeline. So they wanted to get rid of them. And this is one of the reasons why those school resource officers are so important and why they're there. If they were standing right there when it happened, it would have been over with much less carnage. But it takes, it probably took them a minute or so to get to where it was actually happening. The real question is where did this 14-year-old get a weapon? My guess is out of the home somewhere. It wasn't secured. That's usually how these things happen. And everybody likes to talk about we need more laws. Show me anywhere where a 14-year-old can possess any kind of weapon like this, except I know some are allowed to have them when they go hunting, those type of things. And I don't know. Have we heard yet, Mark, what kind of weapon was used?
They didn't say in the news conference, no. I mean, we don't even know if it was a long gun or not. But here's KJP to your point earlier today.
We continue to call on Congress to do something. To do something. We need universal background checks.
We need to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Require safe storage of firearms.
Now, we don't know. You know, we don't know if these things were safely stored. You can all have all the gun laws and all the laws on the planet, but it might not do any good. And in this particular case, to your point, I'm pretty sure he was violating a bunch of laws that were already on the books.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, we'll start to find out a little bit more about his mental health status, you know, what was going on with this individual. But, you know, these things always start the same way, with a grievance. You know, there's something well known in this threat assessment world called Pathway to Targeted Violence, and they all start with a grievance. So that'll be one of the questions. Why did he do this? What was his grievance, real or perceived? So hopefully that will come out. But my guess is he had, you know, he had some preparation before he did this. He didn't just walk in and decide one day. And there are many opportunities to stop these things before they happen if people around them, specifically loved ones, are paying attention to what's going on. And, you know, when's the last mass school shooting that we had? Do you remember?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I'm not exactly
Uvalde.
Sure.
Uvalde was the last big school
that
shooting.
That was after, because I'm going to spend some time here on what happened in Nashville with Audrey Hale, but was that one, Uvalde was after that one?
Yes. Uvalde was 2.5 years ago. I'm talking about a big, you know, big numbers, big mass shooting. There's been, you know, others, 4, 5, 2, 3. Those are bad enough, but I'm talking about the mass
right.
shooting.
Yeah, I guess Audrey Hill, there were 3 victims in Nashville.
Yeah, those typically don't generate as much, of course, media interest. They usually go, you know, they quiet down quite quickly. But the big ones like Uvalde and Parkland High School and Newtown at Sandy Hook, those tend to stay around for a long, long time as far as conversation, research, and all of that. So we'll have to see. It's still developing. But the real question here is, how did a 14-year-old get a weapon like whatever it was? Did the parents leave it unlocked? You know, did he steal it out of a house? You know, where did it come from?
So let me kind of bring this back to some things happening locally, because this is certainly a story we want answers to. But we have 2 stories in St. Louis that are rather interesting right now that I can juxtapose, and they both involve, you know, law enforcement to a certain extent. The one is, there's a story in our local paper this morning. St. Louis mother wants real answers, that's in quotes, after her teen son detained at gunpoint by police. And there's some Ring camera video that's been released of what happened on August 23rd with India Harvey, who says her 17-year-old son has marks on his arm because police kind of roughed him up. And you see some of the things that happened through this Ring camera. I don't know all the circumstances. I don't think you do. I don't even think anybody does at this point. But that's all of a sudden, you know, a news because it involves cops. The bigger story would be a 4-year-old kid who is killed yesterday, or I guess before midnight on Monday, when no adults are in the room and another kid shoots him. I mean, you talk about gun violence. Let's talk about that. I'm pretty sure that that's not something that should have happened, where a 4-year-old should have had access to a weapon like that.
That's exactly what I was talking about. What happened in Georgia today is, where did this
yep.
young boy, 14 years old, get a weapon to do this? And it really goes back to the home. It goes back to their parents or whoever it is they're living with, it are allowing them. Mark, I had a really sad suicide that I handled years ago with a 15-year-old who shot and killed himself with a rifle. This was a suicide. And I noticed he had marks on his wrists where he clearly had tried. He had cut his wrists previously to this, where he shot and killed himself. And I asked the parents, where did he get this rifle? And they said, well, you know, he cut his wrists in October. We got him the rifle for Christmas.
What?
Yeah. You know what, Mark? These are smart people. They are smart people who love their family, love their kids. But I can't explain that.
Yeah, I can't either.
I can't explain it. I can't. And they're smart people. You know, both have good jobs. I just don't understand how some, you know, parents will allow these type of things and to happen. Can they not tell their child, no, you can't have a rifle for Christmas? And we see how it ended. It was this very sad. Now, this many years ago, it still affects me to this day.
I can tell. That is a stunning story. Well, Chief, thanks for jumping on here this afternoon. I am going to spend a little time in the next segment on what happened in Nashville with Michael Patrick Leahy, who is the editor-in-chief of the Tennessee Star. And his publication had to go to the courts to try to get this manifesto, or wherever you might call it, the diary release. But I appreciate coming on here. Hopefully, we'll have some more answers on what happened down in Georgia soon. You have a great week.
All right. All right, take care.
You know, yesterday I did not talk about the Tennessee Star publishing the Covenant School Shooters Manifesto, Audrey Hale. I did go through it in great detail yesterday and just never got to the topic. But this afternoon we have Michael Patrick Leahy, who is the editor-in-chief of the Tennessee Star, which just published this diary, if you will. It's been described as a manifesto. It really is. I described it a bunch of scribblings in a diary. Michael Patrick Leahy joins us this afternoon. Michael, how are you this afternoon?
Mark, thanks so much for having me on. I love St. Louis. Great people there. Bill Hennessy and, of course, Dana Lash and Gina Loudon got their media starts in St. Louis.
Oh, we know them all. You know, it's funny that you mentioned a Gina Loudon, Dr. Gina Loudon. I was very close with John at one point, and I guess their son is now a rising star in conservative media. Did you know that?
Yeah, it makes sense. Look, St. Louis in the early days of the Tea Party movement was one of the hubs of activity, and it's because of Tennessee, Dana Lash, and Dr. Gene Loudon.
Yeah, Hennessy is great. I love Bill. We go way back as well. Well, let's talk about the Tennessee Star and this particular story, because, Michael, this has been a long fight for you to publish this, and I don't remember all of the details, but it seemed at one point both sides, meaning the police and also officials at this school where Audrey Hale killed people, she was the transgender Covenant school killer, they didn't want this out there, did they?
Well, they still don't want it out there. The heinous crime was committed by 28-year-old Audrey Elizabeth Hale, a biological female who self-identified as a transgender male.
Right.
On March 27th, 2023, she walked into her former elementary school and murdered 3 9-year-olds and 3 staff members. She was shortly thereafter killed by brave officers of Metro Nashville Police Department. She left behind a lot of information about what her motives were. She left behind a 90-page journal in her vehicle. It was 90 pages written between January of 2023 and March 27th of 2023. She also left behind a spiral notebook, which was sort of an operational plan of attack. And that afternoon, when they obtained a search warrant to seize documents from her residence that she shared with her parents, Metro Nashville Police Department officers, FBI officers, ATF officers found a number of items, which included 20 journals that she had written between 2007 and 2022. We immediately sought her writings,
right.
All of those documents we sought. The Metro Nashville Police Department turned us down. We filed a lawsuit under the Tennessee Public Records Act to get them. We also, the FBI has those documents. And so they turned us down under FOIA. We filed a lawsuit in federal court under that against them. The federal court trial remains unresolved. The judge there is reviewing all of these documents in camera. It's going to make some decision at some point. The state case was still pending in June of 2024 when we independently, legally obtained from a source familiar with the investigation, this 90-page journal, diary, if you will, that she kept in the last 3 months of her life, and many documents from the internal investigation and many crime scene photos. And so we published stories based upon that journal, about 50 of them, but we didn't publish the journal itself. We wanted to give the judge in the state case time to make her decision. She made her decision in July. It was a very bad decision. She refused to allow any of these items to come out. In the intervening 2 months, we needed to put together enough of legal defense funds so that if the judge followed up on her bogus complaint against me that she claimed I was in contempt of court based on nothing and wanted to stop my ability to publish these things. But I had to have an attorney to protect me against
that. Of course,
that.
Of course, yeah.
And then there was this copyright infringement. We finally got Harmeet Dhillon to represent on a potential copyright infringement. And so we just published it yesterday because we had our legal basis covered. And it reveals, Mark, that this was a very, very troubled young woman.
Very, yeah.
Deep psychiatric problems in her own handwriting, you can see. And she was being treated by Vanderbilt University Medical Center for 22 years. She was also on a number of SSRI psychotropic drugs for like the 4 years of her life. And none of it helped. She got worse and worse and worse. She had suicidal ideation. She told Vanderbilt University Medical Center professionals, according to documents obtained, that we obtained from the Metro Nashville Police Department investigation, she wanted to kill her father, and she wanted to participate in a mass shooting at a school. Vanderbilt University Medical Center professionals failed in their duty to warn, and that's
part of the story here. Wow. Absolutely. But Michael Patrick Leahy is here, editor-in-chief of the Tennessee Star. I want to put something into perspective here. The Tennessee Star is not the major daily, if you will. Are you more of a conservative alternative newspaper? How would you describe the Tennessee Star?
No, we're a state-based news site. I founded it in February of 2017. We report on news that matters throughout the state of Tennessee, but particularly focus on what's going on in the Tennessee General Assembly and state government.
Yeah. But, Michael, I don't want you to misinterpret. The reason I'm asking that question is because why is it that Michael Patrick Leahy and the Tennessee Star was so interested in this information, which you should have been, and other media organizations seemingly were not? That's confusing to me.
To ask the question is to answer it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Media there in St. Louis.
Yep, yep.
So local television no longer is in the business of reporting news.
We have discovered that in St. Louis as well. I confirmed.
Yeah, so I describe local television as the synoptic globalist left-wing progressive censorship industry, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I say synoptic, they all see the same thing. And that basically there are four companies that own all the local television stations around the country: Gray TV, Nexstar Media, Scripps, Sinclair. With the exception of Scripps, they're all left-wing globalists. With the exception of Sinclair.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And even at the local level, Sinclair leans left, even though at the corporate level they're conservative. They're not interested in the news. And then the local newspapers have devolved into, you know, not local at all. They're run by some, you know, like the Gannett group is run by left-wing progressives. And they bring in people from out of town who don't care about your town and write up left-wing progressive junk.
It's just amazing. Look, I'm actually, it was a back channel way for me to give you credit for doing actual work on this in journalism when seemingly the rest of the journalistic establishment doesn't have an interest in this. And I wish we can go on, Michael, because this is a great conversation. But unfortunately, as you know, the clock comes into play here. What do you think? Is there a main takeaway moving forward from what you released yesterday?
Yes.
In other words, will there be anything that results from this release?
Yes. In the state of Tennessee, the Tennessee General Assembly will pass legislation to address the failed mental health system that failed the victims in this case. And one of the things is I think they will extend the statute of limitations, which is now 1 year, in the failure of a duty to warn. That's going to be one of the things that they're going to do. And there's several other things that need to be done. Ongoing professional training of mental health professionals so they know that they have a duty to warn.
And this is why this is important. You're summarizing exceptionally well why all of this is important to release, and it's been so frustrating that it hasn't been out there up until this point. At least a lot of it hasn't, because I know you had some of it. Michael Patrick Leahy from the Tennessee Star. I'm out of time. We'll have you back. Keep us posted on this, because I have a lot of interest, and we certainly do here in St. Louis, as you've indicated, with our trans clinic that finally shut down. And we call this a little bit of ground zero with some of this stuff, what happened at Wash U, Michael. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Mark, it's great to talk to you and everybody in St. Louis.
We'll have you back. Thank you. We're coming up on hour number three next.
Get more at 971talk.com.
You know, yesterday I did not talk about the Tennessee Star publishing the Covenant School Shooter's Manifesto, Audrey Hale. I did go through it in great detail yesterday and just never got to the topic. But this afternoon we have Michael Patrick Leahy, who is the editor-in-chief of the Tennessee Star, which just published this diary. If you will, it's been described as a manifesto. It's really, as I described it, a bunch of scribblings in a diary. Michael Patrick Leahy joins us this afternoon. Michael, how are you this afternoon?
Mark, thanks so much for having me on. I love St. Louis. Great people there. Bill Hennessy, and of course, Dana Dana Loesch and Gina Loudon got their media starts in St. Louis.
Oh, we know them all. You know, it's funny that you mentioned a Gina Loudon, Dr. Gina Loudon. I was very close with John at one point, and I guess their son is now a rising star in conservative media. Did you know that?
Yeah, it makes sense. Look, St. Louis in the early days of the Tea Party movement was one of the hubs of activity, and it's because of Hennessy, Dana Loesch, and Dr. Gene Loudon.
Yeah, Hennessy was great. I love Bill. We go way back as well. Well, let's talk about the Tennessee Star and this particular story, because, Michael, this has been a long fight for you to publish this, and I don't remember all of the details, but it seemed at one point both sides, meaning the police and also officials at this school where Audrey Hale killed people, she was the transgender Covenant school killer, they didn't want this out there, did they?
Well, they still don't want it out there. The heinous crime was committed by 28-year-old Audrey Elizabeth Hale, a biological female who self-identified as a transgender male.
Right.
On March 27th, 2023, she walked into her former elementary school and murdered 3 9-year-olds and 3 staff members. She was shortly thereafter killed by brave officers of Metro Nashville Police Department. She left behind a lot of information about what her motives were. She left behind a 90-page journal in her vehicle. It was 90 pages written between January of 2023 and March 27th of 2023. She also left behind a spiral notebook, which was sort of an operational plan of attack. And that afternoon, when they obtained a search warrant to seize documents from her residence that she shared with her parents, Metro Nashville Police Department officers, FBI officers, ATF officers found a number of items, which included 20 journals that she had written between 2007 and 2022. We immediately sought her writings,
right.
All of those documents we sought. The Metro Nashville Police Department turned us down. We filed a lawsuit under the Tennessee Public Records Act to get them. We also, the FBI has those documents. And so they turned us down under FOIA. We filed a lawsuit in federal court under that against them. The federal court trial remains unresolved. The judge there is reviewing all of these documents in camera. It's going to make some decision at some point. The state case was still pending in June of 2024 when we independently, legally obtained from a source familiar with the investigation, this 90-page journal, diary, if you will, that she kept in the last 3 months of her life, and many documents from the internal investigation and many crime scene photos. And so we published stories based upon that journal, about 50 of them, but we didn't publish the journal itself. We wanted to give the judge in the state case time to make her decision. She made her decision in July. It was a very bad decision. She refused to allow any of these items to come out. In the intervening 2 months, we needed to put together enough of legal defense funds so that if the judge followed up on her bogus complaint against me that she claimed I was in contempt of court based on nothing and wanted to stop my ability to publish these things. But I had to have an attorney to protect me against
that. Of course, yeah.
And then there was this copyright infringement. We finally got Harmeet Dhillon to represent on a potential copyright infringement. And so we just published it yesterday because we had our legal basis covered. And it reveals, Mark, that this was a very, very troubled young woman.
Very, yeah.
Deep psychiatric problems in her own handwriting, you can see. And she was being treated by Vanderbilt University Medical Center for 22 years. She was also on a number of SSRI psychotropic drugs for like the 4 years of her life. And none of it helped. She got worse and worse and worse. She had suicidal ideation. She told Vanderbilt University Medical Center professionals, according to documents obtained, that we obtained from the Metro Nashville Police Department investigation, she wanted to kill her father. And she wanted to participate in a mass shooting at a school. Vanderbilt University Medical Center professionals failed in their duty to warn. And that's
That's part of the story here. Wow. Absolutely. But Michael Patrick Leahy is here, editor-in-chief of the Tennessee Star. I want to put something into perspective here. The Tennessee Star is not the major daily, if you will. Are you more of a conservative alternative newspaper? How would you describe the Tennessee Star?
No, we're a state-based news site. I founded it in February of 2017. We report on news that matters throughout the state of Tennessee, but particularly focus on what's going on in the Tennessee General Assembly and state government.
Yeah. But Michael, I don't want you to misinterpret. The reason I'm asking that question is because why is it that Michael Patrick Leahy and the Tennessee Star was so interested in this information, which you should have been, and other media organizations seemingly were not? That's confusing to me.
To ask the question is to answer it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Media there in St. Louis.
Yep, yep.
So local television no longer is in the business of reporting news.
We have discovered that in St. Louis as well. I confirmed.
Yeah, so I describe local television as the synoptic globalist left-wing progressive censorship industry, right?
Yeah.
Okay, synoptic, they all see the same thing. And that basically there are four companies that own all the local television stations around the country: Gray TV, Nexstar Media, Scripps, Sinclair. With the exception of Scripps, they're all left-wing globalists. With the exception of Sinclair.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And even at the local level, Sinclair leans left, even though at the corporate level they're conservative. They're not interested in the news. And then the local newspapers have devolved into, you know, not local at all. They're run by some, you know, like the Gannett group is run by left-wing progressives, and they bring in people from out of town who don't care about your town and write up left-wing progressive junk.
It's just amazing. Look, I'm actually, it was a back channel way for me to give you credit for doing actual work on this in journalism when seemingly the rest of the journalistic establishment doesn't have an interest in this. And I wish we can go on, Michael, because this is a great conversation. But unfortunately, as you know, the clock comes into play here. What do you think? Is there a main takeaway moving forward from what you released yesterday?
Yeah.
In other words, will there be anything that results from this release?
Yes. In the state of Tennessee, the Tennessee General Assembly will pass legislation to address the failed mental health system that failed the victims in this case. And one of the things is I think they will extend the statute of limitations, which is now 1 year, in the failure of a duty to warn. That's going to be one of the things that they're going to do. And there's several other things that need to be done. Ongoing professional training of mental health professionals so they know that they have a duty to warn.
And this is why this is important. You're summarizing exceptionally well why all of this is important to release, and it's been so frustrating that it hasn't been out there up until this point. At least a lot of it hasn't, because I know you had some of it. Michael Patrick Leahy from the Tennessee Star. I'm out of time. We'll have you back. Keep us posted on this, because I have a lot of interest, and we certainly do here in St. Louis, as you've indicated, with our trans clinic that finally shut down. And we call this a little bit of ground zero with some of this stuff, what happened at Wash U, Michael. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Mark, it's great to talk to you and everybody in St. Louis.
We'll have you back. Thank you. We're coming up on hour number three next.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.